This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The effort to end homelessness is an ongoing battle here and across the country with no simple or easy solutions, but the fight to get people off the streets and into safe housing or shelters continues. In 2009, Cincinnati and Hamilton County adopted a comprehensive plan to address the problem. Strategies to End Homelessness releases their second annual progress report on ending homelessness today, and we talk about the report's findings with Carolyn Daly, team leader of Social Services for Mercy Health St. John, also Kevin Finn, who's executive director of Strategies to End Homelessness. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Kevin and Carolyn, thank you for being here this afternoon. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Kevin, this is the second year for the progress report on ending homelessness. Now, how do you specify who's being counted as homelessness? And based on all that, what did the report find?
Well, we count people as homeless who are literally homeless, basically in one of two situations. They are either a resident of one of our emergency shelters, or they are on the street or in a place not meant for human habitation. There are clearly other situations that many would consider homeless, doubled up and sleeping with friends, different things like that. But those are groups that are very hard to count. So the report we released today is focused on people who have been on the street or sleeping in one of our shelters. Overall, what the report said is we saw a very small increase in homelessness, less than 1% from 2012 to 2013. But we did see some very interesting shifts within the homeless population. The vast majority of our homeless folks are under roof somewhere in a shelter, and a smaller minority is out on the street. What we saw in 2013 was the number of people in shelter declined slightly, but the number of people on the street, at least for part of the year, increased significantly.
What, in terms of this always being an ongoing battle, in terms of the slight increase that we see, what can we attribute that increase to? Is the heroin epidemic playing any role in there being more homelessness?
I think the heroin epidemic does definitely tie into it, but I think a more significant factor, if we were sort of going to take them in order of importance, is that homelessness prevention resources have been decreased dramatically. So we were only able to, and Mercy St. John, where Carolyn works, is one of our primary agencies providing homelessness prevention resources or services. We saw a 50% reduction in the number of people we were able to serve in prevention from 2012 to 2013. And actually, that continued a trend, unfortunately. The number of people in 2013 that we served was only one-third of what we served in 2011. So I think if more people had been prevented from becoming homeless to begin with, then we would have seen a reduction instead of a slight increase.
What's your perspective, Carolyn, on all this? What's your organization seeing in terms of homelessness?
Well, I definitely agree with Kevin. We have seen about half from previous years of those that we were able to serve with shelter diversion, is what we call it, for our prevention program. And a big reason for that is reduced funding. But we are seeing, you know, people who are at the shelter door who are at imminent risk of becoming homeless. And our program is unique in that it works with those individuals to divert them from homelessness, from even having to have that experience.
And to add to what Carolyn just said, I think it's, you know, we typically refer to the services I'm referencing as homelessness prevention, because anybody can hear that name and sort of know what we mean. But the model is really shelter diversion. What we are attempting to do is identify the people who are at most imminent risk of entering one of our shelters or ending up on the street. And those are the people we're targeting prevention resources at. So most of the people that are coming in have already lost their own housing. They are doubled up, as we call it, living with someone else, relying on someone else for a place to stay, and may have actually gone through every option of person they have to stay with, and they're now on their last option. And we identify them basically when they call and they inquire about how do I get into a shelter, because the place I'm staying right now, it's the last place I have available to me, and I have to be out soon. So it really is a shelter diversion model that we're using.
And we work with those households who are right at the shelter door, and we provide financial assistance along with intensive case management to put those families directly into their own housing and help them with case management, goal planning, supportive services in order so that they can maintain that housing moving forward. And then when we step out of the picture, they will have the supports in place to maintain it.
So am I correct in saying that's a transitional kind of effort that you're talking about?
Well, we place them into housing within 30 days, and then we do case management similar to other housing programs and then set goals and get all the resources in place and remove those barriers to self-sufficiency and maintaining housing so that when we leave, they'll be able to maintain.
Homelessness tends to come about and to be a relatively short-term crisis. So the shelter diversion services that Mercy is providing are typically in the 3 to 6 month range. People who do become homeless also, on average, it's a relatively short-term crisis. Our average length of stay in shelter last year over the whole system was about 41 days.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our discussion this afternoon. And let's talk with Bernadine in Anderson. Good afternoon, Bernadine. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi. Thank you so much for having a program about this. I'm just wondering if the guests are aware of the program in Salt Lake City that has almost ended homelessness. And it sounds a lot like what you have discussed, but basically what they've done is they costed it out, and it was cheaper to give the people an apartment and a social worker. Now, they don't each get a social worker. I'm sure the social worker has, you know, several clients. But at any rate, they've almost ended homelessness in Salt Lake City. And it's been about 5 years, I think, since it began, and now it's like the problem is, like, gone away, and it's cheaper than all of the services that the homeless people were using. And then I just have one other wonderful story. There's a movie documentary. There's called Falling Up, and there's two movies of this name, but this is a documentary made by a film student. And basically what happened was a person living in a box in L.A. was sent to the hospital because of all the crazy that happens to the homeless people when they live in boxes. And he got a social worker, and he got an apartment, and he met someone at the apartment, and they got married, and he got a job. And he had been homeless for like 15 years. Living in the box, but because this film student followed him, he was able to get the document what happened to this man.
It's a very interesting question and story. I think somewhat that is a question of resources. We have looked at other prevention and diversion programs around the country, including Salt Lake City, but there are certain pieces to the puzzle of ending homelessness that we can only do with the piece what we are allowed. So, for example, homelessness prevention is by far the most cost-effective way to come at ending homelessness. It costs about $1,080 to prevent a person from becoming homeless. That cost goes up by 30% on average the moment a person walks into a shelter. That is not because the shelters are throwing money around or wasting money. It's just by the time a person walks into a shelter, they have literally lost everything, basically. So prevention, which keeps people out of the shelter system, is by far the most cost-effective way to come at it. But if you look at the resources that are available, the federal government is the biggest funder of any services for the homeless. The amount of money that was made available to Cincinnati and Hamilton County this year for helping people who are already homeless is $14 million. The amount of money that is available to prevent people from becoming homeless is about $650,000. So a drop in the bucket. And we are not permitted to shift resources from homeless programs into prevention programs. So we literally are left in a situation, in some cases, where we have to wait for people to become homeless before we can assist them.
So prevention, like the old saying goes, prevention is indeed the best medicine.
It is by far the cheapest. Yes. It is 30% higher as soon as someone walks into a shelter, and that's presuming that shelter is all that they need. If they needed a transitional housing program or something like that beyond shelter, the costs go up. But it's 30% higher, even if shelter is the only intervention they needed.
Yeah, and it definitely makes sense. And homelessness is traumatic, and families within homelessness and singles within homelessness have experienced a lot of loss. And personally, working with families and clients, if we can avoid that trauma, I think it's the best way to go.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join in on our conversation. Let's speak with Elizabeth downtown. Good afternoon, Elizabeth. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Okay. I was homeless. I lose an apartment because my child is playing in a utility room and never breaks anything. but it's against the lease, and so there I am homeless. I go into a shelter in downtown Hamilton at the Haven House. And the shelter tells you to go to the community development professionals, and if you're in a shelter, sleeping in your car, and you have an income, we'll help you. I walk in with an income of $1,500. We've already slept in the car for a couple of weeks, and now we're in the shelter for a month. The community development professionals give me a letter and say that I'm overqualified. I make too much of an income. When they said at the introductory meeting, if you have an income, we can help you a lot quicker than someone else. So I pay off my eviction. I don't have a criminal background. You're walking around with $1,500. Nobody will help you with a security deposit. So then I move in with my mom and brother who are disabled with my daughter. And that's kind of hard because of his mental condition. And when I call Cincinnati, you know, as I relocate and say, can you help me? They said, ma'am, are you a streetwalker? And I said, what's that? Are you into prostitution? I said, no, we don't have any openings unless you're a streetwalker. Ma'am, are you a drug user? And I said, no, I've never used drugs.
Oh, Elizabeth, okay, that just sounds like you've been through a really tough time. Sounds like you've been through a really, really tough time.
Yes, sir.
Let's see what Kevin might suggest for something like this. I mean, it's a tough situation. Thank you, Elizabeth. We appreciate the call.
It's very interesting. Homelessness tends to be regarded sometimes as sort of a one-size-fits-all sort of proposition for
her situation's very... Wow.
It's very interesting. The problem that I've been working with the homeless for 16 years, and the problem that I frequently encountered when I was a street outreach worker back then was that very often the only interventions that were available was sort of a one-size-fits-all. So you either fit and got that certain assistance that was available or you didn't. And I think that's sometimes where you see situations like what Elizabeth ran into. One thing that we have worked, that the federal government, actually, the Department of Housing and Urban Development has worked to do and we've worked to implement locally, is to have a variety of options for ways we can come at ending homelessness. So we have prevention programs. Well, I mentioned they have been cut significantly. Though prior to 2009, we didn't have any prevention programs at all. The federal government didn't fund prevention at all prior to 2009. And now we have three different types of housing programs that provide the lightest touch that it takes to get someone out of homelessness. So we have rapid rehousing programs that typically help people for 3 to 6 months and do things like deposit in just a couple months' rent. We have transitional housing programs that work with people up to 2 years. And we have permanent supportive housing programs that can work with people forever if that's what it would take to keep them out of homelessness. So we now have a variety of options that are available, and hopefully fewer people are finding themselves in those sorts of situations as a result.
Kevin, do the number of families, and Carolyn, you can perhaps shed some insight into this too, do the number of families facing homelessness, does this further complicate the problem that we're facing?
Yes. In shelter diversion and our prevention program, the majority of households we serve are households with children, and it does make it more complex in terms of finding affordable housing. The larger the family size, the harder it is to find an apartment that can accommodate that family within an affordability that they can maintain. And also there's a lot more barriers that are involved when there are children in the household. Child care is a big one. It's hard for some people to have appropriate, safe child care so that they can work and get the income to maintain the housing. Additional health issues, needs, mental health needs of the children, any developmental disabilities. So having more household members definitely complicates it in terms of there's more barriers to work through when trying to house families.
Yeah, you multiply those barriers potentially by the number of people in the household mm-hmm. when you start talking about disabling conditions and things like that. And the net result is that it can just, the hurdle that a family has to get over to get out of homelessness just is that much taller than it might be for a single individual.
It is indeed, would have to. In terms of chronic homelessness, folks who are addicts, people who have mental illnesses, how can we provide more counseling? How can we get more outreach to those folks to help them?
Well, there are a number of things that we're trying to do to influence chronically homeless people, most of whom tend to be single individuals, not because they aren't a part of families or in families, but if there were children in play, they may no longer be with a chronically homeless person who is still on the street. One of the things we're trying to do locally that is a part of the Homeless to Homes plan is to really raise the bar in terms of the services that are being provided within the shelters for single individuals specifically, because historically many of our single shelters have not really been set up well to, they just didn't have the resources to address severe substance abuse issues, severe unmedicated mental illness, and things like that. So we're trying to enrich those new shelters with those kinds of services to make sure that fewer people become chronically homeless or remain chronically homeless.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And let's talk to Tony in Western Hills. Good afternoon, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you today?
Good, thanks. And what's your question or comment?
First of all, thank you very much for putting this program on today. I'm learning a lot just by listening to everyone. So my question goes back a couple calls ago about the diversion program that she referenced out in Utah. And then you mentioned about the how the funds were allotted within the city and that, and how sometimes that can impede how you want to use the funds or how the funds might just be used. So my question specifically is, what needs to be done to maybe get some of these funds maybe transition more from actual homelessness to diversion? What kind of barriers does an organization like yours face as you're trying to kind of right-size the funds for these problems?
Okay, Tony, thank you for the question.
I wish I knew exactly how to get the federal government to allow us to reallocate some of the money. I have literally had people in the federal government tell me this. I mean, this is sort of the core issue with that. It is very, very difficult to know accurately who is about to be homeless. So I have had people with the Department of Housing and Urban Development tell me that the way they look at it is if you can't be certain of the process for identifying who's about to be homeless, that every person you assist with prevention dollars who wasn't about to be homeless, you just wasted the money. So I think most people would be in favor of the federal government not wasting money, but sort of the attitude they sometimes take toward prevention is, if you can't be 100% certain they were about to be homeless, then you may be wasting money, and it is therefore a more logical way to spend your dollars to wait and see who does walk into the shelter and then help them, because at that point there is no question mark about whether or not they're homeless.
And I'm hopeful that, you know, since I've been doing this work, I have seen federal prevention dollars come into play, which is great. And I'm hopeful that continued success will show that it does work and it is important and it is a need. And I think that with our outcomes, we have a 92% success rate. We continue to show that we're effective.
A 92% success rate, even though we're trying very, very hard to make sure the people we're serving are right at the door of the shelter. So in some ways, we're improving the program by making the people harder to serve. We can be more sure that we are targeting the right people if we're positioning the services right at the shelter front door.
Kevin, the city adopted the Homeless to Homes plan in 2009, was it?
Yes.
What specific areas does that plan deal with?
It does not say anything about prevention, actually, because there were no prevention resources at that time. What Homeless to Homes specifically talks about, I would put into four categories. One, improving the shelter system. And the way we want to improve the shelter system is, number two, adding services. We want to have service-enriched shelters that serve as springboards out of homelessness rather than warehouses for people who are homeless. We also want to increase the housing options that are available. One of the ways to end homelessness is to have good housing options that we can exit people to. And then the last thing is to be more strategic about how we're using the resources that are already available. So it's not necessarily a question of having to constantly secure new dollars to put toward ending homelessness. We also need to be continually making sure we're making the best use of the dollars that are already available.
So I guess part of the whole idea of creating this plan once was to put it down on paper and have a focal point so you've got everybody on the same page, so to speak.
Yes. Now, the Homeless to Homes plan is specifically targeted at single individuals. Mercy St. John and our other family shelters have been coordinating their efforts for years and years and years and do a wonderful job. That has not always been, that level of coordination has not always been as high on the single individual side of the homeless system. So the Homeless to Homes plan was a plan specifically for how we were going to improve how things work for single individuals. There are many common elements, though. That aspect of being more strategic about how we're using funding, adding housing options so that we can move people out of the system, added case management, such as the case management that Mercy provides, mm-hmm. both in its shelter diversion programming and in its shelter programs. Those types of services are what really help people out of homelessness.
Yeah, supportive services such as case management are key. They're crucial elements in diversion, and it's crucial to have that along with our financial assistance, really to help people remove barriers and be stable moving forward.
Let's speak with Bob in Clifton. Good afternoon, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good. And what's your question or comment?
Well, what I was going to say is I was homeless. I'm going to say 2005, 6, and probably most of 7. And way 7 wasn't homelessness, but what I was going to say is, you know, the one thing I found going into the drop-in center down on 12th Street there was, that was really a nasty thing in my life. It's a scary feeling when you're sitting there realizing you are homeless and you have no money. The biggest problem I ran across, because I was there because mainly of my health. My heart was giving out at the time. I didn't know it at that time. And my lungs were bad. I could not get adequate. Everything is spread all around this city. And you would have to go to University Hospital, or you'd have to go downtown, or you'd have to go. I went as far as Forest Park on some things that they were sending me to. And I'm homeless. I had no means. They need to incorporate this stuff closer. Another thing I noticed while I was on the street is the people that I met. They were helping each other. You'd be surprised how much. And the one thing that was really, you were seeing convicts and ex-military. These guys just didn't know anything different. I mean, they didn't know how to do certain jobs. I think they were capable but not educated. I think there's got to be an education thing into a lot of these guys, too.
Thanks, Bob. We appreciate that. Let's let Kevin and Carolyn address that, because you bring up some good points here.
Again, there is a question of resources and what the resources need to be directed at. So most people would tell you that they know mental illness is a factor. 36% of our local homeless population is mentally ill. 26% has a drug abuse problem. But what most people don't realize is 28% of our local homeless population, more than drug abuse, 28% have a chronic health condition, just like he was describing. We just managed to get the county, through the indigent care levy, to provide funding to give resources to the shelters for exactly the kind of health care services and things that Bob, I think it was describing. And really, Commissioner Greg Hartman was really very instrumental in making that happen. So, but that is a new resource that is going to hit the system next year, really, in 2015, that will hopefully change that dynamic.
Yeah, healthcare and health is a big concern and barrier for the households that we serve. I'm hopeful that with Medicaid expansion, we work to get individuals who are eligible connected to the health benefits, and so that they can access services.
Kevin, do we need more volunteerism, people donating time and money to help with this situation?
You know, people don't have to just give money. I mean, that's what people always feel like, they just get asked for money. I mean, every shelter and every facility has to cover basic expenses. And if they have volunteers available to serve meals and do things like that, then they don't have to pay somebody, and they can repurpose their dollars to provide other services to help move people into housing and things like that. So I would actually argue that volunteering at one of the organizations and therefore helping, that impacts their bottom line and helps them move people into housing.
And Kevin, final 30 seconds here. At the end here, where do you go from here? Will some action be taken now that this second report has been released?
I hope so. I mean, really, the resources for prevention are absolutely key. If we could do more shelter diversion like the services that Carolyn is providing, then we really could move the needle on homelessness, and probably would have already if those resources hadn't already been reduced.
Kevin Finn, Executive Director of Strategies to End Homelessness. Also, Carolyn Daly, Team Leader of Social Services for Mercy Health St. John. Thanks, both of you, for being here this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's program is Pete Reitmeier. The technical director is Bruce Ellis. I'm Mark Haney.